Radiolab is supported by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, exercising, cleaning. What if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com, Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Grilwich.
This is Radiolab, and today... F*** it. Elements. We're doing it. We're doing it.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and gold, and protactinium, and indium, and gallium. And iodine, and thorium, and thulium, and thallium.
Satirist Tom Lehrer.
There's yttrium, ytterbium, actinium, rubidium, and boron, gadolinium, niobium, iridium, and strontium, and silicon, and silver, and samarium, and bismuth, bromine, lithium, beryllium, and barium.
Okay, so we have this periodic table of elements, which is a list of the simplest bits of matter that we know of. And so, theoretically, everything that we see, everything that we are, is made of the stuff that is in that table. That's sort of the beauty of the periodic table, is that it describes everything, right?
Yeah.
About 45 years ago, a scientist named Vera Rubin was studying the motion of the galaxies. You know how the galaxies just spin in that beautiful way around, like in spirals? And her calculations did not explain why the galaxies were holding together. And she figured, nope, there's got to be some stuff that I can't see around the galaxies that explain why they move the way they do. What is that stuff? Whatever it is, it's not interacting with the matter of our world, hardly at all. Otherwise, we'd see it.
It's indeed why we call it dark. Dark matter is the dominant matter component in the universe.
That's experimental physicist Rick Gaitskell.
The stuff you and I are made of, these conventional protons, is the flotsam and jetsam of the matter world. It's cast on a sea of dark matter. We're talking about, in terms of the total composition of the universe, you and I, the stuff we're made of, is 4.5%.
The other 95.5% is this stuff, the dark matter, the dark energy, which theoretically is all around us.
If you cup your hands, you have a dark matter particle in your hand. The problem or the challenge is that it is so weakly interacting that it will pass straight through you, and in fact will pass straight through the Earth barely, and will have very little probability of interacting.
But what if you could get one of these little bastards to interact? Then, I mean, forget the periodic table, then you would meet the most fundamental element of them all.
City of Lead, historic hometown.
We're going to tell you about an experiment now, this bizarre experiment, and we sent our producers Andy Mills and Damiano Marchetti to check it out.
You think it's this close?
It is happening in South Dakota, in the Black Hills, in this little town called Lead.
Man, I have not seen this many trees in so long.
Incredibly beautiful, picturesque little town, but right near the town, as you crest over this hill...
That's it?
Oh, that's a deep cut.
You'll see this mountain that looks like it's just been torn open.
No. We pulled over and we walked over to the edge of this thing, and it was like peering down into an ancient volcano.
That's not what I thought it would look like.
Carved out that hill.
In this town... there is one of the deepest man-made holes on the planet.
That's where the experiment is. And it's there because way down deep in that hole,
It's demonstrably the quietest place in the universe.
That is Kent Myers. He's a writer.
The quietest thing will make sense in a second.
He wrote an article in Harper's Magazine recently that is all about this experiment and this hole.
I was interested in the idea of these frontiers that the... You know,
frontier. Where are you from? Frontier.
I'm from Minnesota.
Oh, there you go.
People tell me I sound like I'm from the movie Fargo.
Well, let me join them.
Anyway, Kent says that this story, it starts off way back in the Old West.
A hardy frontier, wild, rugged.
1874, General Custer and crew.
Custer comes out looking for this gold and finds it.
Gold on the mountains, in the rivers, and in the dark depths far below the surface of the earth.
And just like that, 10,000 people within 2 years are just illegally invading the Black Hills, which were the Great Sioux Reservation. And
by 1901, the miners blast 1,500 feet down. By 1927, 3,500 feet down. By 1975,
it's 8,000 feet deep.
To put that into perspective,
that's a sort of mile and a half.
But you say a mile and a half?
They literally move mountains.
Oh, it's immense.
Imagine six Empire State Buildings going straight down.
And gold is that valuable that you could put that kind of effort and energy into
it? Isn't that
scale?
Astonishing?
Yeah.
But what happened is that eventually the price of gold dropped to the point where the size of the mine
was just unsustainable.
When you're mining 8,000 feet down, you know, for every foot you go down, your price increases, your costs increase. You got to haul it further. You've got to air condition the mine.
You've got to pump out the groundwater.
You have to run electrical lines down there.
And so in 2001, after 126 years of being in operation, the mine shut down.
Did it create a ghost town? I mean,
this was the fear. This was the fear that we were just going to have the whole economy of this part of the country was going to fall apart. But as this was happening,
we saw an opportunity there.
These physicists realized that this was a golden opportunity.
Wait. Before we, do experimental physicists, do they love holes? I mean, is that just an old tradition?
Yeah, they're just in love with holes. They're just like dwarves.
No. This is where we get to that idea of quiet. This experiment, it needs a kind of quiet that you cannot find on the surface of the earth.
When you and I are sitting on the surface of the earth, we're not acutely aware of it, but we are being hit by cosmic rays at a rate that I think really rather amazes people. If you simply hold your hand out, 3 or 4 times a second, a cosmic ray is going through your hand, and it's going right through it, and that's every second. So your body is literally bathed in thousands of these every second.
We are just being bombarded with a din. Rick Gaitskill talks about it like being in the middle of a stadium during the Super Bowl.
And this is as though everybody in this arena is clapping.
Now, just imagine that in the middle of all this chaos, there is one person leaning over to their friend and whispering a secret into their ear.
Dark matter is like the whisper.
It'll be lost in the noise.
We have to cut out all this noise in order to even come close to hearing it.
And it turns out putting a mile of rock between you and the clappers is taking you a lot of the way there.
Yeah, it's a great sound. So Rick took us into this mine through these massive iron doors, down these long underground tunnels, into a room where we met this guy.
What's your name and who are you?
Mike Sunich, grew up in Lead, South Dakota. I'm the fourth generation that's been hanging around the Homestake Mine.
Mike worked at the mine, so did his dad.
Both my grandfathers were Homestake veterans.
Most kids that Mike went to school with and his dad went to school with, they worked at the mines.
And my grandmother's father on my dad's side was also a miner.
But now?
Now he works in a room where he basically equips scientists with all their safety gear and stuff.
You gotta have your belt on.
He gave us these boots and a respirator.
If you catch on fire, you want to be able to breathe, right?
That's what you want to hear in the morning.
Yeah.
And eventually,
they climb into this old steel service elevator. A
little further.
South cage is the 41.
South cage, 41.
Lower south cage.
And then we just start rocketing downward.
Oh my God, we're going so fast.
The speed at which we're moving is sort of equivalent to, you know, the speed at which an aeroplane often, you know, when it's descending.
At 1,000 feet, our ears pop. At 2,000 feet, this sort of wet, muddy smell sort of wafts up.
And as we're dropping, all that noise is getting slowly filtered out.
We're able to literally use the rock to absorb these cosmic ray particles.
After about 10 minutes, the elevator stops.
Whoa.
Hey guys, watch step here.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And we step out. 4,850 feet down.
This is a cave, man.
It looks like a cave. It's got a dome-like ceiling and walls that are just carved rock.
So what does that sound?
It's water.
That's the sound of rain coming through a whole lot of rock. To be clear, it's not raining outside. It's not raining up in the world. It's just groundwater.
According to Kemp, it's costing over $1 million a year.
Just to run the pumps to drain that water. So that gives you some...
$1 million a year?
Yeah.
But Rick says, down here...
Like, this is the least amount of radiation that we will ever experience in our lives.
It is quite dramatic. It's about 3 million less cosmic rays. So when you hold your hand out, less than one every few months.
January.
Coming through your hand now.
March.
But that isn't the end of the story.
So we're going to step inside here. The very first step, we actually even have a nice...
Because it turns out that even if you cut out all the rays coming from the outside, there are still rays coming off of us.
You and I, we carry a certain amount of uranium and thorium, these radioactive elements in us.
So...
Okay, so what we're going to do is you're going to take your coveralls off.
A woman named Robin Barlin made us change clothes.
So can you take that machine out?
Yeah.
Okay. Scrubbed our stuff.
Oh, the microphone. I'm going to wipe this. Is that okay?
Yeah.
And then Rick takes us into the lab where the experiment happens. It's this all-white room with this huge tank in the middle.
The tank contains 70,000 gallons of high-purity water and was, directly inside it. And we can, without fear of disrupting the experiment, one can...
The experiment actually happens inside this tank.
One can... bang the outside of the steel container.
The whole idea is that this water will actually filter out even more radiation.
That makes it very quiet.
But still, it's not quiet enough. And so inside that tank of water, they put an even smaller tank of the element xenon.
About a third of a ton of liquid xenon.
Where do we find xenon on the periodic table? What is it?
Xenon is number 54. It's over on the right-hand side, so that we have this imperially named set of elements we call the noble elements.
I mean, they're just too good for everybody else. They interact hardly at all.
That's right. You really struggle to make xenon interact with any other atoms.
Which is just another way of saying that inside of this tank of xenon, which is inside of this tank of water, which is down in one of the biggest holes ever dug by man, it is really, 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 really quiet.
It's demonstrably the quietest place in the universe. I mean, you don't know that it is because there could be somewhere some quieter place. But as far as we know, the center of this Lux detector is the quietest place that we human beings know of.
And what's supposed to happen inside this super quiet xenon space?
So the idea that you have here is that this cloud of xenon, it's just waiting. And the thought is that when a dark matter particle that's like zooming around all the time, when that zooms through this xenon, because it is so quiet in there, because there is nothing else happening in there, that dark matter particle, even though it's not supposed to interact with anything from our world, that particle, if it disturbs, if it nudges in any way any of the atoms of the xenon, will notice it.
And that tiny little disturbance, whenever it happens, Ken says you can think of that moment as the universe whispering to us.
The whisper in human nature, the whisper is a point where we really, when we really want to speak intently to a single person, we whisper. When you know, we whisper at funerals, we whisper in the presence of awesome things in nature. We you know, it's that reduced use of the voice that drops down and drops down until it only goes into the ear it's intended for. It's Isaiah's call, you know. He's lying on his mat and he hears the whisper because he knows that's for me alone. That call is for me alone. And that's that sense that this experiment gives to me, is that here the universe has been shouting and shouting and shouting and shouting at us, and we've gathered all this scientific knowledge out of the shout, out of the clapping, out of the cheers. And now where we're at in the 21st century is we're going down to what's it saying in the whisper. And those whispers go clear back to conception. They go clear back to birth. If we understand these whispers, we're very close to understanding gestation. And I got carried away there, but
oh,
but
we
you,
love
you
it.
Really, yeah.
Okay, and did you get to hear the whisper, see the disturbance, whatever it is? Did you meet the dark matter?
Well, how can I give this to you lightly?
Okay, so this is confession time. I've been looking for dark matter for 27 years, and so far we have yet to see a convincing set of interactions that are associated with this dark matter, and that's
nothing at all.
Yeah, nothing. But Rick hasn't given up hope. I mean, he sort of never gives up hope. I mean, he says maybe we just need to build a bigger, more sensitive detector.
That's, of course, exactly what we're doing.
Instead of their current one, which has a third of a ton of xenon,
we are now designing and building a detector that's going to be 10 tons. You see, so
it says even there. Who knows?
The uncertainty we have to deal with is at least a factor of 10 million.
1,000 RPM.
10,000.
And
20,
the other pretty disappointing thing is that when you're in this room, like in the room with the Lux detector, that's supposed to be the quietest place in the universe, it's loud. It's crazy loud.
There are sounds that I can only describe as robots dying. And like, listen to this.
Was there any moment that was quiet? Like quiety quiet, like deep quiet, feely quiet?
Well, sort of. After we went to the Lux, we had some time to kill, and they took us into the raw part of the mine where they used to mine for gold, and they just sort of walked us through these old tunnels.
You scared?
A little bit, yeah.
And you're walking through the black, and all you hear is like the sound of our feet crunching. The wind is being sucked down. It's kind of rushing through the tunnels. So you just and it's the silence. It's not like the science of like, oh, the street is really quiet outside of my bedroom. It's got like an energy to it. It's got like this. It's kind of like when you're running, and when you stop running, and the absence of your exertion sort of fills you.
Yeah.
It's like that moment where the absence of the noise sort of becomes palpable. And that's, for me, the moment, not standing in the laboratory. For me, that moment was the moment where I'm like, now I am standing at the center of the xenon. I don't think I ever, ever have felt that before.
producer Damiano Marchetti, and Andy Mills.
We have had Damiano with us for almost a year, and it's been a total pleasure. He's moving on, but we wish him... What do you like to wish him?
I wish him quiet. But the good kind of quiet. You know, the kind that has energy.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, the woo, woo, woo kind. That kind.
Yeah.
Thank you, Damiano. Huge thanks to Thomas Dooley. We had original music this hour from One Thrix Point Never, Sylvan Esso, Kevin Drum, Ken Camden, and Vijay Iyer.
Thanks also to Matt Kappist and to Connie Walter and to the folks at Sanford Underground Research Facility for letting us visit them and stay and stay and ask so many questions and finally leave.
Yeah, which is what we're about to do. I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
Thanks for listening.
Message to New.
This is Jamie Lowe.
This is Kent Myers.
Hey, this is Derek Muller calling to read the credits. And I just wanted to do this because I think all these people's names are awesome. I mean, tell me you don't agree.
Radio Lab is produced by Jad Abumrad.
Our staff includes Brenna Farrell, Ellen Horn,
David Gable,
Dylan Keith,
Matt Keelty,
Andy Mills,
Latif Nasser,
Kelsey Padgett,
Arian Wack,
Molly Webster,
Thorin Wheeler, and Jamie York.
Who are these people? It sounds like a crime-fighting team, you know, when you got the Kelsey Padgett and the Thorin Wheeler.
With help from Simon Adler, Kathy Tu, Molly McBride Jacobson, and Alexandra Lee Young.
Our fact-checkers are Eva Dasher and Michelle Harris.
I mean, tell me those aren't cool names. Eva Dasher? I just love these names. Anyway, thank you so much for having me on the show, and I don't know if you guys have time for a plug, but if you haven't checked out Veritasium, you might just want to go check that out. The element of truth. All right, bye.
End of message.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.